Those who can, do. Those who cannot, do it on the internet. FancyPantsGangsters.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to yet another gaming show on Netcast.
You stole my opening.
you jerk.
Jeff is my favorite person ever.
Wow.
You left a silence there.
I did. It was my own fault. Yes, it is yet another gaming show. And
I forgot the rest of your opening.
Yeah,
after that.
I was so excited. Yeah, not so smart now.
It's not that important. I think we'll be fine without. Not, my heart will go on.
Oh well.
Fancy Pants Netcast on the Fancy Pants Netcast Network. Fancy Pants Gangsters Netcast Network.
You just took a dump on what little professionalism we have on this show.
Actually, he might have.
You mean you don't
it.
Just drop in that intro every time?
No. It's all recorded
that was
live.
Years of practice.
It's recorded live.
Maybe. I always cut that out and then dropped it in whenever I produced the show. Dropped in like one where you did it really well and you didn't like trail off at the end. And
but that's
sound
part
weird.
Of the fun. This isn't a mass produced thing. This is something handcrafted.
This is like cookies
each week
with cheese sprinkles.
Yes, right. Don't pretend to understand what I'm talking about. Now, yes, this is yet another gaming show, part of the video game content. Yeah, you screwed me up.
We make stuff and we put it on the internet. You can find it there.
You've completely thrown off my rhythm. It's terrible. I am Evan. That is Jeff coming back probably for the last time.
You know why I was able to come back this week is because my band practice has been getting later and later on Wednesday nights, and you guys have been getting earlier and earlier. I think it's because Evan is just getting older and can't stay up
he
past
gets
the
sleepy.
8 o'clock
yeah,
that,
he gets
that
sleepy.
Would normally... Yeah, the end of the shows would always be a little strange because Evan was like, oh, he's getting cranky and fussy.
Dozing off, yeah. I'm of advanced age, as we've talked about many times on the show. We also have Ian, fresh from PAX.
Yes.
And it's going
to survive. I have the PAX box, though, so.
Oh, you do?
That's why I have the iced tea.
Oh, I still think that looks like beer.
Maybe it is.
Beer with ice in it?
Ew. Oh, I think
What are some of the symptoms of PAX box?
You get a cold.
Just a regular cold, but you got it at PAX, so
one,
I mean it's
one
like...
One year is H1N1, so
I mean... I guess it's better than that.
Yeah.
How many PAXes has it been? What's your PAX count?
I've only been to two.
This is just two? Yeah. Oh, I thought you had been to more.
No. 2010 PAX Prime was my first one. I skipped the 2011, and 2012 I went to Boston.
Yeah.
Well, do we want to get right into the PAX stuff then?
I think
then,
we should.
Or?
I think you have a new story.
Well, we do, and you were actually here to mention this.
Yeah, I was there for it.
Or not to mention it, but to see
experience it.
Yeah.
To experience it live. The Child's Play charity, which we've talked about many times on the show.
Huge fan of it. Huge
run by the guys from Penny Arcade.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Started and managed.
Mm-hmm.
Yes. That is extending its scope. Now, because it used to be where it would give games for kids that were stuck in hospitals because they were sick and it gave them something to do. Now, they're actually expanding it to assist children that are living in domestic violence shelters.
Yes.
So, it's going beyond the hospital and just going out to kids that just need a distraction in as many different forms as they can.
Yeah, and this came up during the Q&A. Someone kind of went up to you, ask a question, basically give some props for Child's Play. And that's when they took the time to announce that it's going to be for the domestic abuse shelters. And I think one of the big things, at least that they kind of alluded to, is that the secrecy of these locations is often important to running a abuse center. So it's like I think you're gonna give money or goods to the general cause, and then they'll get doled out to the locations as needed.
Well, especially if it's like a, I guess battered women, battered children.
Yeah.
You want to keep them out of the hands of the people doing the battering. So.
Yeah, and it's a really cool thing. And the one thing that they kind of said, the reason why they got turned on to the idea, was that battered women shelters, domestic abuse centers, tend to become also shelters for children too. Then.
Mm-hmm. And, the children come with.
Yeah. You know. You know, if it's a spousal situation with a kid, and the woman and the kid got to get out, at least then there'll be toys or something positive for the kid to have in that terrible experience.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, like you said, they'll be you can donate cash and video games and toys or anything that you think will help out kids in a just a bad situation. I guess is the easiest way.
That's pretty cool. I always like to see them branching out and growing that because it still is growing every year.
Yeah.
And, I mean, it kind of sucks that they don't have a Minnesota.
Well, we have the Ronald McDonald House here.
Yeah.
Which is just huge. I mean,
is that one of their locations now?
No, it's not. But Ronald McDonald, I think it's Ronald McDonald.
I don't know if I've donated to an actual like Child's Play. I've usually donated through one of the like partner, like Desert Bus for Hope, or something like some one of the partner ones that doesn't necessarily specify a specific.
Yeah. But I know the Ronald McDonald House here locally does a lot of the same things, I think. So it's almost like overkill, where you probably want to focus your attention to cities that don't necessarily have those kinds of things. So for the years in the past where I've picked, you know, which kind of cities to give it to, it's like, you know, right after Katrina, definitely gave, you know, some stuff to New Orleans and stuff like that. And there's usually a good reason to find a city that you can support.
Mm-hmm.
Again, you can find all that big information at childsplaycharity.org.
Now, is that going to be an ongoing thing, or are they going to do like a...
It sounds like it's just they're just kind of expanding the general mission of the charity. It's not going to be this month, you know, the money raised from this day to this day is going to be for battered, you know...
No, I mean, every year they try and add more hospitals. Last year was they started international.
Yeah,
so I mean, it's just part of their expanding, you know, we're getting a ton of money... Let's try and spread the love.
$3 million
last year they raised over $3.5 million.
Yeah.
So I think it's now they've gotten to that point where it's like, you know, I wonder if they're...
A lot of these hospitals that have been in it for a bunch of years probably have a lot of...
Well, I was just going
to
say,
you want to give it to places that are sort of new to the program.
I wonder if there's such a thing as diminishing returns when it comes to charity. You know, is there just, you know, you've given enough?
Well, it's not like a toy is something that needs to be replaced every year.
Well, actually, I buy a lot. I would, like, when I usually do it, I would buy a lot of the cheaper things, but a lot of them. And a big
maybe
thing,
a little more disposable, not necessarily
like
video
crayons,
game consoles.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's something that definitely does need to get replenished every year.
The one I gave to last year was like a couple hundred crayons and like 500 super bouncy balls or something like that, right? Like, they just wanted like simple little things for kids to play with too.
Yeah, yeah.
And those are things that are going to get lost, or, you know, kids are going to take a bouncy ball with them. And it's kind of nice to refill that stuff too. Now, the kind of comment I made to my girlfriend is it'd be really nice if they had like a July drive for the abuse centers so that I forget how much I gave over Christmas and give just the equal amount come July. You know, just being charitable out of forgetfulness.
No, I'm saying no.
We care to elaborate?
No, I do not. I like to be mysterious.
Yeah, it doesn't work for you though.
No, it doesn't.
No. Come across as shallow.
Do I?
And
I'm transparent. Sorry. I'm sorry.
But yeah, so
I'll just shut up now.
Good, because I'll keep talking then.
Good, because you were actually at PAX.
I was at PAX. I went to two of the days. Friday and Saturday. Sunday was Easter. We had had to have a little Easter dinner out in Boston. So, but the PAX report, I think kind of some of the notes I wrote up, I encourage all of you to try and go to one of the events. I don't think it really matters, you know, Boston or Seattle, whichever one's easiest for you to get to, wherever you can leverage your friend's couch to stay on.
Yeah, or if you're here, they're exactly the same distance from each other, so you're kind of damned if you do, damned if you don't.
Well, Boston's about a 2.5-hour flight, and Seattle's about 4.
Is it?
Yeah. Because you can...
Oh, that's time zones for you.
Yeah.
Oh, bastards. I hate them so much.
But definitely try to go. I think it's a worthwhile experience. At what, $60 for a 3-day pass? It's definitely something you should try to do. Now, the one thing of all my Boston friends, they ask me, well, you've been to both. Which one's better? You know, everyone wants to have the best city. And the one thing I'd say is that the Boston event and convention center, whatever it is in a really weird part of town. Not like weird, like I'm going to get stabbed 30 times walking down the street, but like it's on this kind of... I don't want to say island, but it's kind of like on the ocean, away from the city. So all of your restaurants are oceanfront restaurants, and when you look at Yelp, they're like $3 signs, $4 signs, $3. Like the Cantina was a $4 sign restaurant, so which means it's pretty damn expensive.
Oh, okay. I have hardly ever gone Yelp.
See, the more dollar signs, the more expensive.
The more you pay. I understand.
It's a scale of 1 to 4.
Yes. So 4 is like the most
high as it goes.
Yeah.
What's that? The equivalent like plate?
Probably like $50 a plate.
Oh,
or something
very expensive restaurant.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's a not in jean shorts kind of place.
Yeah. Okay.
Not in your PAX going cosplay suit.
Yeah. Not exactly fast food or Denny's.
Yeah. not a bad option if you're looking to spend a little money on dinner, but
I always like doing one like big meal on
a
nice trip.
Barring it through the rest of the day.
Like a nice expensive
gig. And by that, you just mean going from bar to bar to bar.
Yeah. Well, interesting you mentioned that. My kind of thought at PAX Prime in 2010 was that it was a very, I want to say, sober experience. I didn't see any availability of beer at the convention center. Maybe I missed it. But at the Boston Convention Center, there's a Sam Adams bar just straight up in there.
Oh, it is Boston, so.
I know.
I assume they have Sam Adams just sold out of carts in every corner.
Yeah, it's like a hot dog stand. They just wheel them out. It's like a Starbucks. Yeah. Just every other corner, there's a Sam Adams place.
So yeah, so the one thing I did like about the location in Seattle is that it was really easy to go find something like a Subway or a Jimmy John's. Like, really easy.
Yeah, you were kind of in... It was a normal sort of convention center area where they know that there's going to be a lot of people and access to food and access to other things to do if you're staying within walking distance.
At this place, you're at the whim of the food court, which looked really good. But it's like $11 for a salad, $3.50 for a bottle of soda. Like, so you got to kind of bring your preparations. I had, you know, my backpack loaded with power bars and, you know, a cup bottle of water, so... If you're kind of on the cheaper side and you want to have easy access to food and amenities, maybe prefer Seattle in that one. Other than that, both are great events. The other thing is wear your good shoes. Don't come wearing your like shitty little sneakers that don't give you any support because you're going to be walking and standing in lines all day.
I made the mistake one year at Gen Con, which is a big convention that I go to every year. And it's similar scope.
Board gaming convention. Or RPG.
It's board gaming, RPGs, card games, just traditional games.
Yeah.
And... I made the mistake one time. I forget why I did this, but I brought flip-flops.
Oh, Jesus.
And I wanted to murder myself as well as everyone else in the hotel.
You get blisters like in the little thong between your toes. The ass crack of your foot.
It was just bad times. So even like I've got Converse, you know, All-Stars upstairs, and even that is tricky.
Yeah. I wore my like running shoes or my tennis shoes.
Actually tempted to buy new shoes before Gen Con this year. So
I actually did that. It was like Monday before I left. I'm like, oh God, I don't have like solid shoes. And I like did the Amazon Prime overnight of a pair of Asics.
Well done.
Yeah. Well, it was that time of year to buy new shoes too. So I was like, ah, we'll just expedite this process here.
Shoe season?
Yeah, shoe season, spring. So Friday, we got there about 45 minutes before the keynote Q&A kind of started. And we see what we thought was the end of the line, and we realize that, no, there's corner, and then another corner, and then about 50 more corners, and we're at the end of the line. Surprisingly, we made it in the keynote. The keynote was, I forgot the guy's name, but he is the creator of Prince of Persia.
Jordan Mechner, I think is how you pronounce his last name.
Yes. Really,
on the facts.
Really interesting guy, not that great of a public speaker, though, but I felt like he had a cool story to tell. He just didn't have a good job telling it. But the kind of cool thing, they're going to make The Last Express for iOS, which I think is a game that didn't sell well, that has a lot of huge fans, that I'm definitely excited to check out now. So
yeah, The Last Express was a murder mystery that took place on the Orient Express. It was like the last running of the Orient Express. So it's kind of an Agatha Christie style murder mystery. And it was cool. It was done. I actually remember the game. I think I was one of the 12 people that bought it originally.
And he would thank you.
Yeah, I'm sure he would. And it was done in the style of the time where everything was like rotoscoped animation.
Yeah.
So if you've ever played like Out of This World or Flashback on Genesis, it's that kind of... Clearly, you know, polygon animated, but it was all motion captured. So it's kind of like if you just watch like the wireframes of motion capture now, like that's what the whole game was basically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But it was a very cool animation. But of course, it's coming up for iOS and not Android. So
now someone asked him about Android and he said he would love to do it. He just, you know, the development team is working on iOS right now.
Mm-hmm.
Clearly, jerks. That's kind of how things go.
Jerks.
So that was pretty cool. And so I did bring the girlfriend out there. She lives out in Boston, so she came with me. She's not necessarily a gamer. She has a 3DS. And at this point, I'm like, oh God, she's gonna hate this. This is kind of dry. Then Gabe and Tycho take the stage. And it's time for the Q&A. And I think the first question, they just basically launch right into questions. The first question is, how often do you guys touch dicks? And they just look at you like, so we're starting there, I guess, all right.
Well, PAX has been going for 10 years. All the juicy questions have probably already been asked.
Yeah. And in the Q&A...
I guess that question might be considered fairly juicy.
Yeah, yeah. Depending
on the state of the dicks in question, I guess.
Yeah. And I think that's the point in which we both started really enjoying ourselves, because
as soon as the dick talk started, she was there, is what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay.
Well, I think as soon as you start seeing the personality of the convention come out through these two guys, and you definitely see it through everything. So that kind of, you know, the Q&A was definitely fun. I think, like, if I go, when I go to my next PAX, I kind of want to make it just a point to go to everything that Gabe and Tycho or Jerry and Mike do. Just because they're so funny on stage, and their whole kind of shtick is based on the interaction with the fan, and we're some twisted people. Like, the fact that they can roll with the punches and, like, have funny stuff to say on command, basically, to some of the questions they get is awesome. Because on Saturday, we caught the second half of them creating one of their strips.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And from my perspective, it was amazing just to see how fast Gabe can draw a strip. We walked in, and it was basically he was finishing drawing it, and he had to color it. And he colored it in maybe 15 minutes. Like, perfectly, you know, it was the one where he's Gabe's trapped in the glass house or the glass mm-hmm. bubble. Mm-hmm. And, like, you know, you had to put all the streak lines, and it just, like, effortlessly. It's like, well, I'm talentless now.
Yeah, I mean, he's one of those guys, it's fun to, like, watch. You know, I've followed Penny Arcade since almost the beginning.
Yeah.
And it's amazing to see how just his art has progressed, you know, since the very beginning. And even if you look at, like, I think of when the Rainslick Precipice of Darkness,
yeah,
when their first game came out, like, even the shift from that to now, like, he's just made huge.
Yeah, I mean, there's pretty... I might not have been reading it as long as you have,
well,
Mr. Hipster,
uh-huh,
but I at least went back and read all the archives back in college. But yeah, I mean, there's some dramatic shifts in his art style as he gets better and better. But mm-hmm. in the last couple years, it's kind of the refinements that you can still, if you look hard enough, like, there was a time when he was really into, like, very sketchy sort of art
yeah.
style where
yeah.
you could see all the sketch lines. And,
yeah.
And now he's kind of back to the solid black line style, but maybe a little bit more impressionist, where people's mm-hmm. heads are a little bit bigger
well,
than
it's
their
interesting
body. And
I think in the last year or so, they now share a studio with
PvP.
With PvP.
Yeah.
And
Scott
Chris Straub.
Yeah, and Chris Straub from Chainsaw Suit.
Yeah.
And
I love Chainsaw
Suit. I love Chainsaw Suit, too. And it's weird, like, how both, you know, Gabe's and Scott Kurtz's style have almost kind of found a middle ground between, like, they're each influencing the other.
Well, now they're working together on that one, The Trenches,
which is
and
awesome.
And they kind of,
yeah.
There have been a couple times where they've traded. I mean, usually it's Scott Kurtz who's drawing The Trenches mm-hmm. and all three of them write it, but occasionally they've traded off and Gabe has drawn The Trenches, and it's a pretty interchangeable
yeah.
nowadays
yeah.
because they both kind of develop their style.
What's interesting.
Into something that's, you can still see it's recognizably their own style, but mm-hmm. it's sort of similar. They've gotten ideas from each other.
Exactly.
They've influenced each other.
On one of the fourth panels, I think on PATV Series 2, they had Gabe and Scott were talking to each other, and it was this kind of, like, almost emotional moment where, like, Gabe goes, yeah, I actually really liked the way you drew one of your characters' noses, so I downloaded the image and practiced drawing it all night. And here's Scott, who is just saying how he feels like a piece of shit compared to Gabe's art style. He's like, really? Like, you did that?
Now, I've said on multiple occasions that artists and people that can draw are just on the same level of sorcerers, as far yeah. as I'm concerned. Like, I don't know how you do it. It's just, it's like sorcerers and woodworkers. Like, I don't understand how that happens. It just happens.
Yeah, just make it happen. Yeah.
But to draw a nose all night, that is the sign of a madman.
Yeah.
Well, it's practice. I mean,
I understand, like a
musician will practice a certain riff. Well,
I think musicians are madmen too. So
perhaps we are.
Yes.
So
maybe it's just my ADD. I can't fathom doing one thing.
Well, the worst is, like, I'm gonna take five circles and turn into Mickey Mouse. It's like, go screw yourself.
Can he draw a perfect circle?
No.
Oh, fuck him. he's worthless. And if he could, fuck him. He's too talented.
That's right.
So basically, now moving away from the Gabe and Tycho show we've been having here, the Love Fest, if you will.
They're cool people. Shut up.
They are. And I think they do a lot for it, and I think they take a lot of flack, and we'll get to that in a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But so some of the panels, you know, like, well, I was there for 2 days, and it's amazing how little you get to do in 2 days and how much you get to do at the same time. So the three panels we picked out to go to, we went to Games and Education, Gamers with Disabilities, and then a Harassment and Online Game session.
And so you picked some like heavy panels, or are they all kind of that issue-based?
No, like there was like four heavy panels, and we really wanted to do the social health or psychological health in gaming, basically like for the effects on the psychological effect of gaming, and also I think how you can use games for psychological benefits or something like that. Seeing that the girlfriend has a doctor in psychology. But we missed that because the Q&A went a little long, and we had determined at that point that the Q&A was worthwhile to stay at. The Game and Education session is really like an interesting look at using both games to teach and game design to teach. So it wasn't just the aspect of using, all right, here, go play this game. You know, go play Carmen Sandiego.
Yeah, like video flashcards or something.
Yeah, and it was some people working on some really neat projects. I missed the point on one of them. One was this guy who made like a first person shooter, where you had a gun who could suck in code like JavaScript, and then you would shoot the code at things, and whatever that code block was, it would do that to the object. So if you had like a block that would do like x minus one, it would move a block in x minus one direction. If you wanted to move it further, you'd do x minus 1,000, just edit the code. And it was supposed to teach people how to program, and I see how you're confused.
I'm not confused, I'm just like, that sounds like a terrible game.
Right. It sounds like, to me, it sounds like a bad game and a bad way to learn programming.
Yeah, it's like, I don't see the point of any of that.
And maybe it was just the demo wasn't in-depth enough to show me its brilliance. But like he said he was teaching kids in like Brazil how to code with this like gangbusters.
Well, okay, that I could see, because like... I'm certainly not the coder, either of you guys are, but and I know how little you code, so you know that should really tell you something. But I remember starting with like Logo.
Okay.
So and that's kind of that sounds kind of similar, where it's more just getting the basic concepts. Like it makes sense for kids. Like I could see that making sense for kids. It's like, but if I wanted to like learn C now. Like, that wouldn't necessarily be very helpful for me.
So
I don't think it's... I think it's more the concept
of
instructions and changing variables to change the effect and functions.
And that makes sense.
Yeah.
If you are listening and you are interested in learning software or anything kind of with software, I found a book series made by O'Reilly called Head First. It's like Head First Java or Head First Design Patterns. And it's a series... written by the concept was created by a few people where they actually try to figure out how people learn. So like the first five pages of the book is them setting up the ground rules. If you get bored, you will put down the book. Yeah, you will do all the examples. They basically set up all these ground rules of how they're going to engage your brain to slam this material in your head. I've read probably like maybe one chapter on the design pattern section, but if you're looking to learn programming, I'd encourage you to check out one of those books. Go to your library or bookstore or whatever. Might be a pretty good resource, because I find a lot of books to be really hard, which is like they just beat you on the head with knowledge and you walk away with nothing. And this is more psychologically, how are we going to teach you? tangentially speaking. But the one big thing there is it's the gaming with education thing is they really wanted to challenge the idea of American education system being based on rote memorization. You're going to learn that 2 plus 2 equals 4 because we're just going to make you memorize an addition table and a multiplication table, and that you'll be able to draw that all up from memory. And they're really trying to teach kids problem solving, teamwork, creativity, how to actually learn how to learn. And that's what they really want to do with the game design and the gaming. However, it's not necessarily all rosy. They do have a problem with how do you quantify what kids are learning, how do you measure it, how do you prove to the state that you are teaching your kids.
Yeah.
Not necessarily saying like to the extent of No Child Left Behind, but you know, you do have to have at some point a standardized test, or you need to have some way to quantify what your kids know.
It's kind of interesting because you think about PAX and you think about Penny Arcade and the people that created, I mean, these are the guys that gave us the term dick wolves.
Mm-hmm.
So you almost wonder, and then you hear stories about guys taking their pants off in the panels and things like that. So you almost wonder, it's like, what the hell is this? And then you hear about shit like that.
Yeah.
It's like, how are we using education? How are we, you know, teaching retarded people how to do stuff with gaming? You know, just very heavy, very hardcore topics.
Yeah. So moving on, we went to then the last panel of the day we did was the Gaming with Disability. It was put on by Able Gamers. It was actually a really interesting panel. They had a developer from PopCap, one of the disabled gamers who is on the Able Gamer Foundation. Then there was a basically he had another disabled gamer who was a programmer slash consultant, and then some kind of lawyer, and then a developer.
I love that Metallica album.
Yeah, some kind of lawyer.
Yeah,
and then a developer from BioWare, and basically they talked about some of the concerns and some of the issues within the community and how their big message was if game developers made games that were colorblind friendly. And, you know, basically instead of having colors represent something, have colors and symbols so that the symbol's at least unique. Closed caption the shit out of everything. And if you think of, like, a Resident Evil game, and when a door opens behind you and you hear that cue that, oh, crap, there's a baddie behind me, if you're deaf, you don't see that or hear that. So closed caption that, like, hey, door opens behind you. And then the final thing was remappable controls for everything. They say, like, with those three things, like, the world is open to a lot of gamers. The other thing they said is, you know, like the hardcore games may not necessarily be disabled friendly. And I think this gets to something that we were talking a while ago about the simple mode. Should you have an option where you can skip the action and just enjoy the story or go through a simplified version of the action? And their stance was like, yes. If you want to see the story and you just want to peripherally do what you can with the action, why shouldn't that be an option?
When we were talking about it, it's from a perspective of just, this is what I prefer. I don't want to fight because I suck at it, you know, or I'm not interested in the story. I just want to get to the boom boom, you know, but that is a different angle on it where it's just, I can't, you know,
yeah.
I can't do that. And I, when I was growing up, I had a friend of mine that had one good arm, mm-hmm. you know, he had a hand that he had a little bit of grip with, but not much.
You couldn't do controller stuff.
Yeah. So, but he learned how to play Genesis with one hand. Genesis is super dope. Yeah. With one hand, he just kind of, you know, perched it on his leg and did that.
And went to town.
Oh yeah, fucking bastard was amazing.
A lot of pinky strength.
It was, yeah. He could crush granite with that one, the other hand. You know, just a madman. So it's interesting that the remappable is, yeah, it's not one of those things you think about. Like I hear about remappable, but it only ever comes up in the context of these controls aren't like Halo.
Yeah.
So why can't I remap them to Halo yeah. You know, Halo controls?
It's more like my thumb is kind of weak, so I can't hit A. Let's remap this to a trigger where my, you know, index mm-hmm. finger is stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Or those kinds of things.
And it's one of those things where all of those options are good even if you're fully capable.
Yeah. Do you know what was amazing is just the fact that a lot of the developers on the panel said, we found out as we shipped the game that one of our designers was colorblind and never told us. So, like, I guess my plea, if we have anyone that designs games or part of it, if you're colorblind, let your boss know. Like, it's not a problem. You're clearly excelling with the disability, if you want to call that. But the fact that that is an actual asset to the team now, where you can review and be like, okay, with colorblindness, can you understand what you're doing? But so many people have just accepted it or don't want to talk about it that people get on teams and are colorblind. Like, one in seven people are colorblind. And then as the game shifts and they realize they're not colorblind friendly, they're like, oh, we could have done something about this in the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And it's one of those things where I guess, like they said, it's not like people are ashamed, but it's that they just don't think about it. They lived with it their whole life, and they just come to deal with it. One of the other things that they talked about on the panel that was really interesting was, and it's kind of interesting to go to the gamers with disability one, then in a little bit I'll talk about the harassment one, is how the disabled gamers really like the online worlds because they were put into a world in which their disability didn't matter. Like, if they went through the whole life with a disability, they might never have been picked to play, you know, football or play any of this, you know, on the playground with the kids. And here they go into an online world and they're just like everyone else. You know, there's no limiting factor. And to them, that was really cool and really important in their lives that they had this place in which it didn't matter. Pretty cool stuff. Definitely check out Able Gamers if you're interested in supporting that cause. So then that was the end of Friday. We went and then played Robo Rally in the board game room for about 2.5 hours.
Robo Rally's awesome.
Yes, it's one of those cool things you can do at PAX. You have just a huge table set up, give them a driver's license, check out a game, go play with some people. So
cool.
It was definitely a lot of fun. And then that brings us to Saturday. We did the expo floor which is completely overwhelming. And if you want to play any game, carve out at least 3 hours from your day. We hit up the merch booth and wandered around, and that was about it. Then we did the drawing the panel, and then that brought us to the harassment in online games.
What was that panel about?
Yeah, it's about harassment in online games.
Oh, okay.
It was interesting. It wasn't about general harassment, you know, like the use of sexist slurs or racial slurs or anything anti-gay. It was specifically targeted really at sexism, which isn't a problem within the panel, but I think there's a lot more that you can discuss. But then that panel would be 5 hours long. And it, they had one of the panelists was created, not in the kitchen anymore, or not in the kitchen or something like that. Basically, in which she would go on and play like Halo. You know, she's really good at it. And she would just record her mic, what she was hearing and what she was saying. And it was just absurd, some of the things you would hear. Like, she would talk like, oh, someone's camping on the bridge. And then someone on the team like, oh, Jenny's hot. Because Jenny's a girl. And you know, all girls that play Xbox are hot. So her favorite is the scientists, the people that know all chicks who play Xbox are hot or ugly or fat. Then they had one of the creators from fatuglyorslutty.com, which posts screen caps of messages players will send to gamers that they perceive to be women.
I'm a fan of that site.
Yeah. Yeah, they opened with a loop of some of those clips, and it was like, you start laughing, and then you just get really like tired of the, just like, first off, the bad English. I think my favorite was the show me the Bob.
Maybe they wanted to see a Bob.
Not show me the boobs, but show me the Bob.
That could be a euphemism for anything.
It could.
Yeah.
When was the last time, you know, maybe that's the new slang. Hmm?
I haven't been on the street in a while.
Oy. Apparently not.
Oi, show me the Bob. Sorry. I did an accent. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I thought we talked about this, Jeff.
But they definitely talked about it, and they I think the one thing the advice they had is, especially for female gamers, don't be afraid. Don't play as a male avatar, you know. Don't do all these things to hide yourself because you don't want to be picked on. Definitely go on the world and be who you want to be. And then it's really up to the community to report those that are being absurd.
I've heard some, like the individual messages and things like that. That's one thing. I'm sure we've all seen videos where someone has recorded, like just the in-game chat, you know, of people saying stuff while they're going. And I wonder if there's so much of that. I mean, there is that the whole greater, you know, internet dickwad theory.
Yeah,
where it's more of, because there's this audience, there's almost this additional kind of incentive to be fairly creative in quotes.
I wish I remembered the show they were talking about, but it was some show that was made when Tekken Cross Street Fighter was coming out, or maybe Street Fighter Cross Tekken. And basically there was this coach who was sexually harassing one of his female teammates.
Oh yeah, that was a story that was pushed by Kotaku for a while.
Yeah, and like they got to the point where she was contractually obligated to play, so she just basically sat there with the controller not doing anything until, you know, she lost out of the match. And it's like one of those things where, like, that's not anonymous, but the guy's excuse was, well, that's what the community wants to hear.
Mm-hmm.
And it seems kind of like, and like the other thing they talked about is how the perception is it's always 12-year-old boys saying it. And how almost all of the recordings the gal from Not in the Kitchen gathered were dudes clearly over 20. So it's an interesting thing of how we all have these perceptions about how it's, oh, it's 12-year-old boys. We just excuses that. Then my thought is like, well, if we know there's 12-year-old boys playing in that world, why are we allowing things to get this obscene? Like, don't, you know, they're going to walk away thinking that behavior is okay. So as a society, we're not progressing anything then, just by even the excuse of it just being 12-year-old boys is a bad thing. So their basic thing was, you know, definitely, you know, report it. One of the guys who came up to do for the Q&A was a GM for, I think, the Star Trek MMO. And he said, you know, GMs get a bad rap. You know, you do a report, nothing gets addressed. He goes, we address every report. It might just take us a week or so to get to it because we get a lot of reports to look at. But it's one of those things where he said, don't stop sending the reports just because nothing gets done right away about it.
That's good to know. Yep. Next time I'm sexually harassed on Star Wars, I will report it.
I can see you still playing Star Wars. I don't know why. Season is something someone old would do.
What? What does that have to do with anything?
Has to do with
you're anything. Ageist. You yes, ever think of that?
I am. Completely.
Where's my website? There's fat, ugly, slut. There's no old.
Because people of your age don't know how to use the internet.
Damn it, you're right.
Old.com.
Old. I don't even want to know if that's... Actually, I am kind of interested now. Continue your story.
So that was my PAX experience. I think it might be valuable to go into some of the controversies, if you will. I think what would be wise to do, if you're interested about the PAX controversies, is visit Penny Arcade and look for my big PAX post. CW Gabriel posted something basically of the rundown of the three things that came out. Evan, you talked about the guy taking his pants off.
Yes.
And it was kind of funny. Monday morning, I checked Twitter and I saw someone shouting at Robert Chu about how he's killing the gaming culture because they kicked this guy out. This, what was it, Keith?
Yeah, it's some comedian, in quotes.
Keith Apricary?
Sure.
But I guess, you know, like, as Gabe points out, it's pretty simple. He did that multiple times at the last PAX event. He was told he's not allowed back in. And
by did that means he would crash panels.
Yep.
Get up on stage, take his pants off, and start dancing.
Yep.
Clearly somewhat disruptive behavior. And unless Jeff does it.
Then it's acceptable.
Acceptable, but encouraged.
Yeah.
Did he crash all the harassment and gaming panels?
He was not at the harassment panel, surprisingly.
That would have been awesome, actually.
I think it was he crashed the red versus blue panel.
Yeah, the Rooster Teeth one, yep.
But I think the big thing there is, you know, he asked, can I come back? And they said, you have to sign a contract saying you won't do this. So it's the first thing he does. Takes off his pants and dance. Like, what are the P&A crew supposed to do with that? They had him sign a contract saying he won't do this, and what's the first thing he does? Breaks the rule.
Well, you know what, though? The fact that we're even talking about this did exactly what he wanted it to do.
But it's like one of those things where you see all these people flaming against Penny Arcade, and they don't know the story.
I really think it's... Yeah, you just can't care. You just can't care what you know, and Gabe talked about this later. He's like,
yeah,
you know, last year you bagged on me for X. Now I do the opposite of X, and you're bagging on me again. It's like, you know, just who cares at this point?
Well, and what I think was interesting is Destructoid posted an article saying that this is a guy who makes every panel more fun. Which might be a truth statement. And a lot of absurd things happen at Penny Arcade. The first question at the Q&A was, how often do you guys touch dicks? So it's not necessarily a...
I like how you always pause every time you've mentioned that, as if we're going to answer. Because I'm telling you right now, the answer is not often.
Not often enough.
Well.
You
didn't ask how much we want to touch dicks.
Right. So definitely this isn't a safe for work kind of convention, and I wouldn't say it's necessarily a child friendly convention either. So the fact that this guy is doing it isn't maybe out of line, but the big thing is you can't set the precedence that it's okay to jump on stage while panel's going on. You have to worry about the security of your panelists and the security of your convention goers.
Mm-hmm.
And by saying, okay, it's okay if you let them on the stage. No, you can't do that, especially if you haven't signed a contract saying he won't.
Yeah, it's just...
It seems like a null point, and you're right, and that's exactly my thing. Is like, he got exactly what he wanted. He's going to get his YouTube stream and his website are going to get, you know, infinite hits, and life's going to be good for a while.
Mm-hmm.
The next one was the boobs, as Gabe calls it, which they had a gal dressed up for Lollipop Chainsaw. And imagine a one-piece swimsuit, but then you cut a V down from the neck to the crotch region, and it was just all exposed skin. Very, very safe for work. You could wear this to any workplace, and it'd be... No, it's not really.
Wasn't that the Borat thing?
Basically, a little bit more material, like some stuff on the back, but essentially that...
I think there were sleeves
for support as well.
Yeah. From the post Gabe put up is that, you know, Warner Brothers, the producers of the game, and everyone are really cool with it. It's just the community that's having uproar. And you're right, his thing about, I did X and you flame me, now I do Y and you flame me, is from this. Last year they got flack for the Duke Nukem Forever booth babes.
Because originally the policy was no booth babes at all.
They have to be applicable to the game.
Yeah, they have to. And not only do they have to be applicable to the game, but they have to know something about the game. Like you can be there at the booth, but if you're quizzed on what kind of game it is or anything about that, you have to be able to answer. You can't just be there to be, you know, eye candy.
Yep. And this kind of goes to their, we want to make it a safe place for everyone. So they go to them and say, listen, Lollipop Chainsaw had a school bus there to promote their game. You can stay on the school bus or you can like wear a hoodie on the floor, you know, like cover up a little bit. And now he's getting flamed for hating women because he wanted the woman to cover up. And I think this is where he basically says, where is it? Hopefully now you can see why I find this so fucking ridiculous. How about all of you that hate me get together and have your own conference? If you need to decide if half-naked girls are empowered or exploited because I'm doing my fucking best here and it's apparently always wrong. I swear to God, I don't understand how I'm supposed to know if I'm promoting the patriarchy or criminalizing the female body. The best part is Jessica, Warner Brothers, and everyone at PA is cool. This was a non-issue. It was apparently only a big deal to people who didn't even attend the show.
Well, this is an argument that always comes up anytime anybody talks about cosplaying. Yeah. You know, some hot woman wants, you know, dresses up in a revealing outfit, and there's this whole thing, well, is it empowering or is this exploitive and all this stuff? And it just so happens that it happened to be directed at a fairly big player, which is always going to exacerbate the criticism just because it's easy to take down the big guy.
Mm-hmm.
So, whole thing's stupid.
Yeah, I guess I don't have any convictions on either side of the argument other than if you're going to flame somebody one way, don't flame them the other way the next year. Be consistent in how you're going to flame.
Well, I wonder because, and I thought about this with other things too. A lot of times when someone is reacting to responses, they assume that everyone that has ever responded to them is the same person.
Yeah.
Like if you could find someone that gave him shit for both angles, then there'd be some hypocrisy there. But my guess is it's different groups of people.
There's probably a third group out there who's going to speak up next year.
Yeah.
It's just one of those things.
And we shall lead that group.
Yeah. There was no Easter eggs at the PAX convention.
You're not celebrating Jesus. Not celebrating Jesus enough.
They actually had PAX Easter shirts.
Oh, nice.
Yeah. They were sold out, though, even on Friday at the base when we were leaving at like, or we were going down to the board game area at 7. And then the final one is the Paul guy of promotion marketing. And this is a story I'm very much done with because it's gotten ugly. And from the gist of what Gabe's reporting is, the guy has been continued to harass him. And one of the convention goers was in a position in which he could set up Paul for a prank. And I think the way the Penny Arcade guys did is they basically sent Paul the pictures.
So the whole thing was that this guy had been banned from PAX because of a lot of different things.
Yeah, yeah, the recap, yep.
Yeah, and then he, you know, you can try to ban me, but I'm still going to make it on the floor. They fed him photos through this other person. Like this bad guy made a friend with a guy that happened to be working for Penny Arcade, but the guy didn't know it. They fed him photos. And then they caught this guy basically saying, see, I took photos, therefore you didn't ban me properly, neener, neener, neener. And they're like, oh, yeah, by the way, we actually gave you those photos and you're full of shit.
We have them on a Twitter account. I think they called Paul, you're a dummy or something like that, Paul, you big dummy. I understand how some people could see that, you know, why even prank him, why even egg him on. But I think to me, the more I thought about it, it's like it's this fine line of you're being harassed and are you harassing the person back or are you standing up for yourself? And it's a very fine line. And I think in the first run-in between PA and Ocean Marketing, PA, you know, Gabe specifically might have gotten a little too close and even stepped over that line of getting the harassing the person back.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think at some point, it kind of goes back to the harassment panels, like, you just don't cower away. If you're being bullied or if you're being harassed, I do think there's something at a point you have to show, like, listen, like, I still have some strength here.
Mm-hmm.
And so, I guess that's my opinion is, maybe it was wrong or right, not necessarily right or wrong for them to do, but it was something. And it showed that they're not going to be pushed around. And one of the other interesting things is that on Friday, we saw Gabe walking around the show floor with two of Boston's finest extorting him. Walking the show floor with two police escorts. And then at the Saturday panel for the Draw the Strip, he definitely talked about how he is going through the concert because physical harm has been threatened against him. So you're not going to take that lightly with someone who says, I'm coming in a disguise, I'm going to find you. Right? Like, so clearly, I wouldn't say he's scared, but he's taking precautions. Mm-hmm. You know, like when you're walking on the show floor at Two of Boston's Finest, definitely something has gotten under your skin a little bit.
I can imagine. And I actually got in a bit of a discussion with Mike about this because he was very much of the, why is Penny Arcade even bothering with this guy? Just ignore him and let him go away. And all the points that you made about, you know, standing up for yourself and all of that, you know, there's that. But there's also the thing that I think sometimes people forget about Penny Arcade and Gabe specifically. He's an asshole.
Oh, yeah.
and he admits it. Like when that whole thing started, he's like, you know, I realize that this is not normal behavior, but I'm an asshole, and this is what assholes do. And he kind of owned up to the fact that he can be very petty and very vindictive when, you know, because that's just the way he is. And I'm not used to saying that to excuse him, but I just think it's one of those things that sometimes, no matter how much good you do for a business, and I think of, you know, this, I think of guys like Cliffy B, you know, I think of these guys that kind of have this mentality of being good for the industry but generally assholes. I think sometimes that gets forgotten.
Yeah.
And you know, Gabe is an asshole.
Oh yeah. And I think that's like one of the parts that endears Tycho and Gabe to the conference and to the community, is that a lot of us are assholes and a lot of us are petty and a lot of us are real people. And the fact that when these guys take the stage, you don't get a sense of phoniness. Like Gabe, like legitimately said, oh, I don't like Tim Buckley because I don't like what he does and I think he is a bad artist. He said that on stage about the guy who does Control Delete. Like, he's not filtering himself. And we're a community that when we hate something, like I, at Easter dinner, I talked to three guys who hate Mass Effect 3. You know, they liked a lot of portions of it, but they're the guys who just, and they had like all the logical reasons. They weren't trolling it just to troll it. They're like, this is why the ending upset me. Mm-hmm. Like, this is a community in which having a mixed bag of emotions is accepted. And I think that's why it's important that they do that. But at the same time, you see the sincerity with the Child's Play and all the other things they do, where they like the community. It's not like they hate us all. Just don't cross them.
Don't fuck with the Jesus.
Exactly.
It's the one quote from that movie I ever remember with any regularity. So I really need to see that movie again.
Big Lebowski is a fantastic movie.
I only saw it once in the theaters, and that was it. That's the last time I saw it. So I'm far behind.
Why did you do a movies podcast?
We've talked about this many times before. My movie watching habits are bizarre. I still have not seen Godfather, but I have a film degree.
What?
I have a film degree.
GTFO.
Have not seen Godfather.
Leave your house.
I know.
There are $17 for all three of them on iTunes.
I don't have iTunes, so.
Well, it's free.
No, you just said it's $17.
But iTunes is free.
Yeah, not at the cost of my soul.
Oh, well, I sold a long time ago.
Yes, you did. So that was PAX, though.
That was PAX in a nutshell, and I'm still a big fan of saying that.
In a 45-minute nutshell.
Yeah.
That's a hell of a nutshell.
You can go 100...
You have a massive nutshell, Ian.
I have two of them.
Nice.
You can go 100 times this thing, and you'll never have the same experience just because there's so much stuff going on. It's overwhelming, but I would definitely encourage you to go to it.
Well, all right. Will you be paying for me next year?
No.
Can I at least crash on Amanda's couch or something?
She may not have a couch for next year. We don't know what's up yet. So,
she planning on being homeless?
Yes. Yes. Nice. Homeless is actually a new...
It's not new.
It's a new chic way to live.
Oh.
They're from the East.
Yeah. Them East Coast liberals.
You get a faux wood paneled Dodge Caravan and live.
That's
by
not
the
homeless. That's
living in your car. That's totally different than being homeless.
Yeah.
Well, you're still technically without a home.
Your car is your home.
Yes.
Well,
we should not make
fun of the homeless because that's a mean thing to
we're
do.
We're not making fun of the homeless. We're just clarifying.
I was about to though.
Well, we're splitting hairs.
Yeah.
Greasy.
No,
hairs.
I've always wanted to go to PAX. It always sounds like a good time. They, you know, their mandate is kind of the by gamers for gamers,
yeah,
sort of thing. Less, I guess the only big con that I've been to is the big consumer electronics show, CES in Vegas.
Holy shit, you went to CES?
Yeah, a couple times. Yeah, twice. But I mean, that's all, like, it's like literally everything.
Yeah.
You know, it's every kind of anything that takes power into it.
Well, this is literally everything.
Like
that gives
my friends loved walking through the fucking car audio section. And I just so there's like, wow, these people put a lot of time into pimping their rides.
It's a goddamn you kicker. But it's amazing.
I also won a music player from like some like Core an MP3 win. Player from some like third party thing at a trivia contest at
nice
at CES.
But yeah, definitely. I mean, they even did they were doing a demo test of the 5th edition of Dungeons and Dragons.
I am aware.
Under heavy NDA.
I'm sure.
Yeah. You got to play, but you did not get to talk.
Yeah, we know talking about Dungeons and Dragons.
It's because they know everyone's going to hate it.
Actually, so the guys I was hanging out with who were hating on the Mass Effect 3 are D&Ders, and they're quite excited for the 5th edition. They're hoping that it kind of takes the few good parts from 4th edition with the remaining good parts from 3.5 and makes a 5th edition. That they have a baby. Yes.
That was my hand going above my head in a whooshing motion to indicate that that was above me.
Yeah, and Fantasy Flight had a booth there this year, which was pretty cool. Nice seeing the local
hometown hero.
Yeah, hometown heroes. Nice seeing them have a booth. I guess they did a bunch of stuff for Paint the Line, the new Penny Arcade, like tabletop tennis ping pong game.
Yep.
Tabletop tennis game.
Yeah. Card game, correct?
Yes.
Well, they did the collectible card game, right? Or not the collectible, the Dominion-esque.
No, that's not them.
Paint the Line isn't, or Fantasy Flight isn't doing Paint the Line, but Fantasy Flight Silverlight Series did the Penny Arcade card game.
Yeah, that's the one where one player is Gabe, one player is...
That's the
combat game.
Yes.
It's pretty fun.
Yeah, Cryptozoic did the Dominion, the Gamers versus Evil card game.
Is that like Dominion?
Yeah, that's
why
I call it Dominion.
It's very much like Dominion.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
I
need to get.
I have it downstairs.
Is it good?
It's good.
We played it at one of his gaming centers.
I never go to those.
Why don't you?
Because I have a life.
No,
I don't think you.
I think
do.
It's because I was working.
I think you just work too much, and that's not a life.
Yeah,
that's no kind of life.
Yeah. Well, speaking of not having a life, should we move to new releases?
Sure.
We're stealing.
Would you like to keep talking?
We're stealing all of Evan's transitions, segues, and introductions.
Yeah, just I'm outsourcing.
Yeah.
You're not stealing. I'm doing this willingly.
So I tried something new this week. Rather than just go to GameSpot.com and try to shuffle through their list of games, I tried to put something together.
What?
With some logic.
You prepared?
Yeah, I know.
Get off my show.
So I think the biggest release this week will be Fez for the 360, the arcade.
Finally.
I know Anthony Carboni from Revision 3 has been tweeting all day about it, and I kind of want to go home and play it now.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know what Fez is. Can you tell me what Fez is?
It's a platformer that's 2D that seems to have like 3D elements in which you kind of rotate the world around.
Yeah, it's very similar to, it's got a similar, almost like a Super Meat Boy kind of art style,
mm-hmm.
Where it's, you know, kind of 8-bit simplified graphics. But yeah, it's all about 3D and rotate. It's the whole kind of gimmick behind it is that you can rotate the world, almost like a Paper Mario, where you can kind of change perspective.
Yeah,
and that will actually, like, everything is interacted on a 2D level, but you
can change to a 3D level.
You can
move stuff around.
Exactly.
And, yeah.
So
yeah, that is Paper Mario had some puzzles that were like that, mm-hmm.
And that's the whole game.
Cool.
And this is from the developer whose famous quote was. Was it Japanese games are shit, or I don't like what Japanese game makers are creating these days, or something like that?
Yeah, somebody asked him his opinion. What was that? The Fez guy?
That was the Fez guy. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah, you just asked.
That was
what
Phil,
was his opinion?
Phil Fish.
I don't remember the name.
Fishy Phil.
Fishy. I don't know.
Fishy Joe.
I thought that was the home the of Fez the Poplars. Guy, yeah.
But it might have been. But yeah, there was some guy that said. You just got that, didn't you?
I did.
You did. Yeah, you're welcome. There was a guy that said that all Eastern games were crap.
Yeah.
And that upset some people, shockingly enough.
It's funny, like, his defense was, they asked me what I thought. Like,
yeah, it's my opinion.
Yeah.
Doesn't mean you have to agree with it or share it.
Next on my list of importance is Tribes Ascend.
Yes, that's another game that's been... I've been waiting to come out.
I know nothing about this other than at PAX I saw huge banners when I entered saying the fastest first-person shooter made or something like that.
Really? There are a lot of people who really like the Tribes.
Now, is this like a pay-for game or is this going to be like a free, like how? What's the release model for this?
I actually don't know. I believe it's free to play. But it is, you know.
But if you want to shoot bullets, you have to pay.
It's paper bullet.
It's like having a $50 bullet. Yeah.
No, I don't think it's that much. I mean, like a cent gets you 100 bullets, and then the more bullets you shoot, the more cent, the more pennies you have to pay. And...
Yeah. But yeah, Tribes was another one of those series.
I came on a business model here. I think I'm going to develop around this.
You have to buy ammunition.
Yeah. Free to run, I'm going to call it. Free to die.
I like
pay
that.
To kill. No, that's the motto. Free to die, pay to kill.
That's not the name of the show, by the way. Too
was it Call of Duty 1 or 2 where you started one level as a Russians and like you either were given the ammo or the gun and you had to run with your partner till they got shot to pick up the other half of the set.
That was Day of Defeat.
Yeah, that was like Day of Defeat. Yeah. That wasn't Call of Duty.
Call of Duty had that in it too.
They might have. It's possible. Yeah. But no, yeah, Tribes is one of those series never.
I think I remember that in the very first Call of Duty where they had a campaign for each, for like the Russians, the British, and the Americans, right?
That was back when Call of Duty was World
young.
War II.
Yeah, it was young.
Yeah. Tribes was always one of those great PC franchises that didn't really, I mean, I think they might have done one or two things on console, but I don't really think so.
It never made that transition from like the Quake era to the Call of Duty era, if you will.
But that was a LAN party staple.
Counter-Strike?
This was before Counter-Strike, but doing that, because the big gimmick with that one was it was kind of like Unreal Tournament where you just had really kind of bizarre weapons, but the gimmick was that everyone had jump packs. So, and then you had different weight classes. So if you're like a heavy gunner, you just kind of hovered. it was just kind of like a wet fart. But if you were a scout, you could really get some air, and that would affect the gameplay.
Your gas
too.
Was drier.
You farted propulsive flame.
That's right.
Next on my list, and Evan, I hope you can clue me in on what this is. And so, Tribes is for the PC.
That's
moving
true.
On, Mass Effect 3: The Resurgence Pack.
Oh, is this the one that changes the ending?
No, that's
okay. Oh. That was my question.
Yeah, no, the Resurgence Pack is the multiplayer DLC. This is new characters, new weapons.
Oh yeah, my little brother was really excited. He said I had to buy Mass Effect so I could play this.
Yeah,
pack
the multiplayer is awesome, but this is just the multiplayer pack.
Okay,
the changed ending stuff that comes out. They announced in April, but it's going to come out this summer. I want to say like July or something like that. Yeah. So.
So next on the new releases of one of those arcade games for PS3 and 360, World Gone Sour.
Is it the?
It's the note I have written about is it's a tale about candy. And I like candy.
I was going to joke that it's a Sour Patch Kids game, but...
It's similar to that. It's like, imagine sour gummy bears, and I think it's about their journey from, like, package to the stomach.
That is ridiculous.
Yeah.
I'm intrigued, though. I like anything candy.
Next, we have two strategy games for the PC, and it's unfortunate they're coming out at the same time. Maybe it's the same company. One is called Men of War, Condemned Heroes, and the other one is Naval War, Arctic Circle.
I think Men of War is a series. Isn't that War Games?
Well, like, wasn't that like a movie with Emilio Estevez and Charlie Sheen?
Oh, now you're pulling out the film degree.
That's right. Shitty film, though. Actually, it was a very entertaining film, but...
Which has to be movie? With Esteves's in it.
Multiple Esteves's. Estevi, I think, is the proper unit of measurement.
Is there a mythical movie where Joe Estevez and Mike Martin Sheen were in it together?
I don't know.
Who, Joe Estevez?
Yeah, Martin Sheen's brother.
Yep.
Just like Charlie Sheen and Emilio Estevez are brothers?
That's a weird
thing. We just blew Ian's mind.
I know.
I can think of movies with multiple Sheens.
Yeah, with Charlie and...
Multiple Baldwins.
And Martin.
Oh, there's plenty of movies with multiple Baldwins. Not so much anymore, because they've all... I don't think any of them talk to each other anymore, but... Well, Steven's gone all God Squatter, and...
Billy still shows up in, like, the weirdest places.
Yeah.
Like whorehouses.
Saw him in a while back.
Yeah.
Next on the list is a physics-based puzzle game called The Splatters, which I think is a wet fart.
Yeah, I think that was just, yeah. I think I had
guys,
that last
guys, we got to stop recording. I got the splatters.
Yeah. Next is what I think can only be a Transformer game is called The Legend of Grimrock.
No, you're thinking Grimlock, which Legend of Grimrock I'm actually looking forward to. It's like an old school... turn-based. Well, it might be turn-based, actually, now, but it's grid-based dungeon crawler. So, nice. You know, similar to like a Dungeon Master or something like that.
It's like a board game though, since it's grid based.
Yeah, the big thing behind it is that it's very puzzle heavy.
Okay.
But apparently the puzzles are fantastically done, and they wouldn't work if you were free moving. Like, you have to move as a grid.
Hmm.
It's been getting, I know Destructoid gave it like a 9.5.
IGN rated it pretty highly, and I think they gave the Splatters a pretty good high review too. And then, now is that a $15 title or a full box $50 title?
Legend of Grimrock's 15.
15.
So, at least on PC. So.
Steam?
I think that's only on PC right now.
Yeah. I think there's talk of moving it to arcade, but I think they're kind of testing this right now. But no, I'm really looking forward to that. It's been kind of on my radar, because it is very much kind of one of those old school dungeon crawlers. I think even Arena, like the first Elder Scrolls game, I mean, it's kind of along those same lines.
And then the final game on our new release list for, what is today, April 11th? Skullgirls, which is a 2D fighting game for PS3 and 360. I believe that is also an arcade title, so it's going to be around the $15 price point.
And we talked a little bit about that last week.
And I think that's getting fairly decent reviews also.
Yeah, it's a fighting game where chicks with magical hats fight each other.
I like hats.
Yeah. Magical
I thought
hats.
Persona 3 was coming out.
It didn't show up on the list.
It didn't? Yeah,
like a re-release?
I was almost positive that Persona 3 Fez is out on PSN. Right now.
Persona 3 Fez, like it's an amalgamation.
No, FES.
FES.
It's their extended edition.
Yeah,
it's got
an additional chapter and all that stuff. But I've been actually kind of tempted to pick that up again and play through it, because I really love the Persona games.
So it collects Persona 3 and FES into the same?
Yeah.
Oh, cool.
Yep. I thought that was this week.
Played FES. I played Persona 3.
Yeah, I never played FES either, because originally they only released FES.
What is FES?
It's I don't remember what it stands for.
Fucking excellent simulator. I don't know.
No, isn't Persona 3 where you play high school kids that commit suicide or unleash their soul or something?
Well, they shoot themselves, but they don't really commit suicide.
It's not like they're actually dying. They just they have to shoot themselves in the head to release
their persona.
Inner persona, whatever.
It's one of those things that doesn't make sense, and they never really explain.
It's literally just the graphic when they're like summoning.
Now, can I go tangential here for a minute?
Sure.
Has anyone here read Ready Player One?
No, it's on my list, though.
I'm like a quarter of the way through it. Fantastic book if you're a gamer. I encourage you to pick it up.
Is that Lev Grossman is the author of that?
I don't know. No, it's not him, but I can't think of the name right now.
Okay.
Let me pull up my Kindle.
No, that's another one that's been on my list for a while. But I've been reading The Adventures of Cavalier and Clay for about the last year and a half.
Is that like 200 pages then?
No, it's just I can only read like a page and a half a night. So I'm a really slow reader.
Is that
so.
You fall asleep? Or
yeah,
you just,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
My brain gets stuck.
Your book just thump.
Ernest Cline wrote Ready Player One. Definitely check that out. I'm a huge fan of the book
far. Yeah. It's a very literate show already. You talked about your head first or whatever those are called.
I want to call them Head Start because that's like preschool, but it's called Head First.
Okay.
Yeah, definitely check that out. Books are good.
Read books.
Read a book on a computer, though, or a tablet or a phone. But read a book.
Yeah, or have it read to you.
Ian, do you have anything else to talk about so we don't let Evan run this show for a while?
We could talk about the game.
Yes, because I've been so chatty Cathy this episode.
Yeah. All right, segue it up, boy.
I got no good segue here. We can just talk. There is the one story, and I'm actually kind of upset.
What is your first news story?
Oh, so before we go
we actually already did the first news story because of Child's Play.
We're trying to do a monthly Kickstarter thing. PAX had a Kickstarter room, like a little room probably the size of
show off your Kickstarter.
Yeah, maybe there's like maybe a dozen computers in there, maybe 24 or so. Yeah, a little Kickstarter room.
Cool.
Definitely a lot of people are buzzing about Kickstarter there.
I do want to, actually, speaking of our Kickstarter thing, I want to give credit to the guys from Fist Puncher. They actually commented on our episode last week. And they were upset with Ashley that she didn't like the name
Fist Puncher.
Yeah, that's right. You weren't even here last week. Yeah, yeah. Their feature of the week or feature of the month was a game called Fist Puncher, which is like a 2D beat 'em up. And Ashley had a real problem with the name. And but one of the developers actually wrote on our.
He left us a comment.
He left a comment, and apparently Ashley and him have been talking.
Nice.
And we're gonna try to get him on the show in a couple weeks here.
Fist Puncher. It seems like a name that they would have from The Simpsons.
It does.
You know,
does
like one of the games Bart would go by, like Fist Puncher 2000, Death Race 2000, quality.
Puncher is a thing in Community. So Kick Puncher is like a series of crappy RoboCop type movies in Community.
I always wanted them to make Bone Sword. Speaking of the Simpsons,
Bone Storm.
Bone Sword is your penis.
No, what?
Bone.
No,
Storm.
No, you're right. It's Bone,
Bone Storm.
Bone Storm
is the one where Milhouse puts in his name. Milhouse. Yes. Thrill House.
Thrill House. Thrill House.
And all it says is Thrill Ho.
Yes. Now, what was Bone Sword? Oh, man. The
God, now the riveting radio of looking something up on Google.
Right.
Always love it when the podcast degrades to that.
Okay, there's
I don't know if you guys ever listen to like Dan Patrick's radio show. He has a group of people that can do this for him.
That's because he has a staff.
Yeah, I know.
We are our staff.
I'm just saying I'm jealous right now.
Yeah.
I don't even have an iPhone. You guys are better than me.
You have to text
or any
to
sort
your
of
friend.
Smartphone.
Hey, pal.
I text somebody who has an iPhone to look it up, and then they get back to me.
Wow, nice. We could talk about this on-disc DLC thing. Do we want to deal with that, or do we just want to talk about games?
What did Cliffy B say about on-disc DLC?
Well, this is part of a debate that has been going on for a little while. It's been kind of exacerbated by not only the Mass Effect stuff, which we talked about at length, but also the Street Fighter X Tekken stuff, where all of the characters that you could unlock by paying were on the disc. You were just basically paying for the unlock code. And so Cliffy B, one of the head guys over at Epic, if you don't already know, in an interview with GameSpot, he had said that it is an ugly truth of the gaming industry, and said that often 3 or 4 months where the game is basically done, you have an idle team that needs to be working on things. So they would work on this downloadable content. He said, "I'm not the biggest fan of having to do it, but it's one of the unfortunate realities." And it's one of those things where I've been trying to think about how I feel about this, because I know, and it's unfortunate Mike's not here, or maybe it is fortunate that he's not here, because he has a real heavy opinion about this.
I think Mike's opinion is summarized in, if it's on the disc, you shouldn't have to pay for it. Is that a fair assessment of Mike's opinion?
I think that's fair, and yeah. That's a lot of people. If it's not his, I mean, there are people that are making
that's a camp.
Exactly that
that's
argument.
A camp of people.
Exactly. And it's one of those things where I think just the concept of it, like, I think the fact that Street Fighter X Tekken and other Street Fighter games have done this before, where, you know, paid characters are on the disc, but they're not unlockable until you pay for them.
Yep.
Like, there's that, but then there's also the stuff from Mass Effect 3, where you had some of the content from the From Ashes DLC was on the disc, but not all of it. And there's people saying, well, why is this DLC, especially since it's day one, why is this not on here anyway, since he's such a major character, and yada, yada, yada. And to me, those are two completely separate things.
They are. Let's confine this discussion to the DLC is fully contained on the disc, just to scope it down a little bit.
Well, I mean, it's one of those things where this kind of bleeds into the whole day one DLC argument, too.
Yeah.
But it's one of those things where it's like, how... Yeah, everything is different. You almost got to gauge it differently. Like, there's a lot of people complaining that, oh, this was taken out of the game so that you could then sell it to us later.
Yep.
If that is the case, and it was like completely feature complete and working and all of that, but it was specifically taken out, then yes, that is shady. Okay. But, you know, some of the stuff, I remember when Mortal Kombat came out, when the new one came out, mm-hmm. they had this whole issue with compatibility, because if you downloaded characters that and then played online with someone that didn't have the character, there's a lot of issues with compatibility.
Yeah.
And that's kind of the argument that Capcom is making with Street Fighter X Tekken, is that we need the assets on every disc so that if you're playing with someone that has that character, but you haven't purchased that character, it won't completely fuck the game over. And mm-hmm. that was kind of the argument made for Mass Effect as well. It's like, since you can use this in... Yeah, since you can use some of this assets outside of what you're using it for, then we need to just make sure that that's compatible. And that to me seems like a valid argument.
I mean, I'm on the other side of the river from that camp that Mike's on. I'm totally fine with it.
So I guess
if you want to sell DLC that's already on the disc and people are willing to buy it, fine. If it's a good DLC, I'll pay money for it if I enjoyed the original game. That's what it's contingent to go on, my enjoyment of the original game. I like that a lot of reviewers are calling this out. They're calling out, like, one thing I specifically remembered was the Arkham City with the Catwoman DLC,
yep.
where people specifically called out this Catwoman DLC, you know, comes with the full price copies of the new game. It's not integral, but if you get it, the story makes a little more sense. People are set up, you know, pieces are put into play a little bit more easier to follow in the story. But I really don't have an issue. I mean, I think as long as people like reviewers and people who are sort of watchdogging the games companies are looking at the games on disc as delivered as the original price point and reviewing that, and kind of talking about when they add on DLC, I think that will help people be more aware of when the sort of shadier side of stuff happens, when stuff is actually left out of the game, and it leaves a residual mark on the original game, the disc game. I mean, if a reviewer feels like they're not getting the $60 worth for the disc game, then that's something that should be said in the review, you know?
Yeah, I think one other aspect to look at, and this is where maybe Cliffy B was trying to get at, is you could have something code ready to ship, but maybe the QE isn't done, so you put it on the disc. Okay, so once we ship the game, we'll go through the QE process, make sure it's validated. If we need to patch any of those assets on the disc, we can, you know, patch the game then. We have those mechanisms now. But, you know, once it's QE'd, then we can start charging for it. You know, like that might be one other aspect too, is it's like we can put it on the disc, we can save the math, we can save everyone the time.
I don't know why it matters whether it's on disc or not, because the delivery mechanism to me does not have anything to do with whether it was, say, ripped from the game during design or development.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and that's kind of the argument that Capcom has made now, because they've got a Better Business Bureau complaint lodged against them that they've responded to, and they said that there's effectively no distinction between bonus content included on a disc and downloaded content. And that's kind of the argument you're making, is that it doesn't matter where it's coming from.
Yeah.
If it's bonus, it's bonus. And
it's the company who's selling it. They're not misrepresenting the product. They're selling it specifically as original game and additional content. Mm-hmm. And we as the consumers have to make our decision. We have to use, you know, reviews and try and trust, you know, our reviewers. Hopefully the reviewers are, you know, impartial enough to make it known when this sort of shady stuff is going on. So,
well, I think the other part, you were kind of alluding at this, Jeff, is that it comes up to you as a person, and ultimately when we buy games, we are supporting a model.
Mm-hmm.
And if a fighting game comes out with 5 fighters and the rest of them are bonus and they're all on disc, clearly something's not right there. It's like, you're not going to drop $60 for a fighting game with 5 fighters. I mean, what's today's standard for a fighter count? 30, 40 fighters on disc?
Depends on the game. I think Street Fighter had like a dozen.
A dozen, sure. Maybe that's on the low end, but you got to have some quantity of fighters. And you're going to have, I think, what I would hope this one take away from is the old unlock model, how you beat a fighter and you unlock that model, or, you know, you kind of go through the game, you start unlocking things. Is I don't want to replace the option of discovering and unlocking with I just pay for it and get it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's fine to have the option to say, okay, you can pay $5 for this fighter and earn them early, or you can play through these goals and unlock it naturally.
Yeah, well, it sounds like, at least with the Street Fighter X Tekken, that is what it is. These aren't characters that you can unlock. You have to buy them.
Yeah, see, I would have to look at kind of what Jeff was saying, the original deliverable. When I plug that disc in without paying any extra money, am I happy with the experience I'm giving? Or do I feel like someone from the studio basically walked through and said, if you cut out
there's, yeah, or you can obviously see, oh, there's stuff that kind of alludes to a dungeon here.
Yeah.
Like, oh, the one that really pissed me off was the Dragon Age, where they put people in your camp mm-hmm. to tell you about the DLC.
Oh, yeah.
And then you got to pay for it after you've, like, done a little bit of the quest line.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there are certainly ways
To me, that's way more shady than on disc versus download.
Oh, yeah.
But that's more shady in the selling model and in the, you know, the selling model, the advertising model.
Yeah. I wonder how many of the people that are basically of the idea that if it's on the disc, it's mine. I wonder how many of them are professional coders or professional programmers or professional computer developers in any sense. Because, I mean, we've got 3 computer people here.
Where's the third?
Oh, that's painful. If you've ever worked on a project to put out, you know, a piece of software, there's always going to be stuff that you couldn't get to, or just, you know, whatever that, you know, for whatever reason isn't complete. You don't make an effort to strip out all of that loose code that you might get to later, simply because it's not ready when the release date is. And there's also things to consider. Like, they talked about how there's 3 months after the game is done, in quotes, that the developers don't have anything to do, but it hasn't been released yet. Because that's where it's going through all the QA and all the certification and stuff like that. And I just don't understand. I don't think people understand that you can't just take code and ship it the next day. Mm-mm. It's just, that's just not the way it works. But it almost seems like
you can, but not when there's the physical media involved. I mean, so there's some people on Steam who can make that model sustainable, but even then there's, you know, whatever their own QE practices. But it's specifically in the console world when you have things like Microsoft certification that has to be done on everything that gets released through their you know, discs and store, online store. That adds a lot of time where you literally cannot change the original game anymore. Mm-hmm. But you, like you said, you still have to, you're still paying these people. They might not have moved on. You know that you're going to need them once the game comes out to patch things and to, if the game is popular, develop extra content, but you don't want to specifically move them to a new project yet. So what do they do?
Yeah.
They try and prepare for that as best they can. They, you know, they work on, they do more testing and work on patches, or they start developing content.
Or they put a few character models on the disc to save bandwidth.
Mm-hmm.
I think one of the things that's interesting is how, when I talk to people about Assassin's Creed 2, now, have you guys beat Assassin's Creed 2?
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
Did you notice the two missing chapters, the two missing memories?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Did you?
I noticed them in the list of chapters, like in the numbering of chapters, but not in the story.
Did you feel like you missed anything in the game?
No.
I had already purchased them by the time I got to that point in the story, I'm not a good example.
I beat that game. I didn't purchase the extra chapters.
Neither did I.
I never went back and I purchased and never replayed those extra chapters, and the game felt complete. I mean, it was literally like if you got some sort of OCD from not having, what, 12 and 13 in your list, going from straight from 11 to 14, then that might, you know, irk you, but like story-wise, they covered that hole. It was like, oh, you know, 10 years of his life went by, and I guess, you know, he wasn't sitting on his ass that whole time. So
I thought it was an interesting way to do the DLC, and to me, I kind of liked it. Like, it tied it closer to the story.
And you know what? I think that's cooler. That's a similar thing to the BioWare Dragon Age thing, where you're presenting the space where DLC would be, but you're not necessarily advertising. You're not pushing people towards it. You're just you're kind of planting the seed.
If you play the game before that was even announced, you're like, what's with 12 and 13? Oh, well, I guess I'll play 14. And I've talked to people about that, and they're like, wait, two memory segments were missing?
Yeah.
Like, they never even caught on.
Now, I'm totally the kind of gamer who wants to know how far I am in the game, so I'm always looking at, like, if it's not, like, laid out in, like, some percentage complete in the game, I'm always looking at online to see, oh, I'm at this chapter, I only have, like, 20% to go. It's a weird model of, like, you know, is it worth staying with this game to complete it? Am I far enough in the game?
Yeah.
I know you're like that too, Evan, so.
No, not really. Really? Like,
I thought that was part of your OCD. Your game CD.
My game CD. If it's anything like that, it's more of a, whereas you see it as a, how far am I? Mine is, how much do I have left?
That's definitely like,
but,
you know.
But what I'm saying is like, if I see that I'm 80% done with a game, but I've only got 40% of the collectibles, then I know I gotta fucking hurry up, otherwise I'm gonna have to replay sections. Like that's really what it is.
You don't want to replay anything.
No, God, no.
I will say, don't ever buy Final Fantasy 13 2 then, because you have to. I guess you can finish the main storyline, but you have to replay a little bit of stuff too. I guess that's pretty much the same with all those games, you know, grinding and.
Grinding I'm somewhat okay with for some reason. I don't know why, but
so you're basically replaying the same battle over and over.
Yeah. I know I didn't say it wasn't a complex psychosis here. It's just you know, What I would love to see, and you kind of get this with the Final Hours series. Have you guys seen those? They did one for Portal 2. It's Jeff Keighley, who works for Game Trailers TV. He did a Final Hours of Portal 2 and a Final Hours of Mass Effect 3, and it's basically this like super in-depth look at the development of a particular game and like the last few months of development. I recommend them. They've got them on iTunes because it's a complete package. So I mean, it's articles, but it's also videos and it's images that they include and things like that. It's very cool. I wish because there's all of these questions about, well, what are you guys doing? Like, why were these decisions made at this point, and why was all of this? And we haven't gotten to the point now, like with movies. To keep going back to movies, like in the special features on some of these movies. I remember the special features for Devil's Rejects, which is one of my favorite movies of all time. And they talk a lot, like he talks a lot about in the special features and in the commentary about why scenes were done in a certain order or, you know, changes that were made for production reasons, things like that. And there really hasn't been that in gaming yet.
You see that a little bit. Some of the games have like an in-game commentary. Valve likes to do that with their games.
Yeah, but you know,
I've been playing Cthulhu Saves the World recently, the little throwback RPG, mm-hmm. and they've got a commentary track you can put on.
Yeah, and I want that to be more widespread because I think there's this weird disconnect between how people think games are made and how they actually are made. And it's fueling some of this ire against the developers. Like this whole, you know, the whole thing of the gap between when the code is done and when you're released and when it's released. Like, what are you doing during that time? Why do you have to do this? Why are you working on DLC during that downtime? And why is that okay? And how does that get on the disc even if it's code complete? Like, there's a lot of questions in terms that just people don't understand.
I love the fact that they can get a head start on DLC. I mean,
I like that too.
Like Skyrim, I love. Having the DLC, if I really love a game, buying the DLC while I'm still actively playing it. Mm-hmm. But Skyrim, you know, like they didn't really put out any DLC for that.
Not yet. There's a big one coming.
But I'm done playing it. I might not get back to that DLC. Like maybe if I want to pick up the game again in a couple years, but.
Mm-hmm.
They missed, you know, and that's totally the diminishing returns of time. You've seen the charts.
Oh, yeah.
There's charts. You've seen
them. Oh, absolutely. I would just love a game that documents, and maybe we'll get this with Double Fine Adventures.
Have you seen the first episode of the
series? No, they've actually put stuff up yet?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay.
They put up the first episode, like a full length, you know, half hour long, nice. Or 20-minute, you know, 22-minute episode.
Nice.
It's interesting. It went, you know, went through the whole, at this point, it just went through the Kickstarter. Mm-hmm. So it just documented that portion of it.
Yeah.
So all the events of, you know, reaching a million and finishing and, you know, their apprehension about it. But it's very cool. It makes it look like the whole in-depthness and sort of access to the team will be really cool. And they'll be able to kind of speak their mind. And
yeah, I think part of the problem is the publishers have such a stronger control over the developers than, say, movie studios have over mm-hmm. directors, you know, in terms of what they can and can't say.
Well, that's not necessarily true. I mean, look what Paramount did do the first Blade Runner or the original Blade Runner.
Yeah.
Well, no, I think what he's talking about is more that the people in the film industry seem to not worry about their jobs as much.
Exactly.
Maybe what they say is going to adversely affect
Like, I don't think we're ever going to get the complete story of what the hell happened in Mass Effect 3, in terms of the development decisions that were made and why certain choices for scenes
just
were
because
made
they don't want to sour their relationship
exactly.
with EA or
exactly
because they are in a, you know, single relationship with EA, whereas in the film industry people are contracted out for, you know, just a certain movie.
Terry Gilliam will badmouth every studio he's ever worked for.
Oh yeah, I mean, and you know, anybody that goes up against Miramax. They've all got horror stories, you know, but they can get work elsewhere. So it's this odd situation, and I hope, and
there's still a danger to it. I mean, there's still a danger of being blacklisted, but it seems people are a little more fearless in the movie industry.
Yeah. So
and they're totally fearless in the music industry. Artists will badmouth their label.
Well, and the labels just don't fucking care anymore. Yeah. It's just like, yeah, we're evil. Get over it.
Your name's Justin Bieber and you print us money. Say whatever you want.
Yeah, go right ahead. So I just find this interesting, but I think a lot of this fervor over day one DLC and all that shit, that's just going to keep happening until there's a better general understanding of what goes into making a AAA game.
I think, you know, kind of like Jeff was saying, we always have to look at and see, are we happy with what we're getting? And if we're not happy with what we're getting, why are we continuing to buy it?
Exactly.
Especially when you have so many great indie gamer or indie game developers.
When you go on Steam and pay less than $10 for fantastic games.
Yeah, you can go get, and like the thing about all this DLC stuff, if you wait a year on Steam, you'll get the complete pack for $20. You'll get every DLC ever made. You'll get everything for the game. And as gamers, we really need to figure out how to prioritize our dollars. And to go back to PAX for a little bit, you know, as we're walking the show floor, Amanda goes like, what is with all of this stuff? Like, why is it like, why do we need to have a Borderlands 2 like huge statue with them blowing up a van? Like, why do we need this? It's like, well, games come out in November and I only get to maybe buy one game every November. Like, not all gamers have money. So when you're trying to figure out your purchases, it's like they really have to do a lot to attract your $60 to that one title. And I think, you know, as gamers, we need to figure out how do we want to spend our money? Who do we want to support? Which models do we want to support?
I think the worry with that, though, is since with movies and music, so much of that, or video games, so much of their sales come from that first week before people can really dig into it. Whereas movies and music, if you don't get what you're expecting, there's enough time and enough people aren't going to have already purchased it.
Well, that's not necessarily a function of time. That's more just a function of a number of avenues of sale. I mean, you know, movies can make a lot on the back end, on the DVD market and on the, you know, syndication to cable market, in that they're not as tied to their first week sales as much as video games, because, you know, there's a much higher diminishing returns on the sale of a video game.
No, I see that. But my point is the whole argument of, well, don't support it. You know, if you don't like it, don't buy it. Well, that doesn't really work on video games, because the majority of people that will ever buy it that first couple weeks. And before there's a time to analyze it, that, you know, these files were on the disc and all of this shit.
Mm-hmm. Well, an example of your point is Mass Effect 3's ending.
Yeah.
I'm guessing before most of people...
That controversy was really quick. It was within a couple days.
But I'm guessing most of the people affected by it had already owned the game, and at that point, you're screwed.
Yeah. I mean, it was one thing because, like, Origin, which is EA's Steam thing, they were actually offering refunds.
Oh, really?
Yeah, for a while. I don't know if they still are or not. But, like, that... And that's the problem. It's like, you can't return the game.
I beat the entire game, and I hated the ending. I want a refund.
I want my $60 back.
Yeah.
And they were doing it for a while.
Jesus.
Yeah, it was really stupid. We're already running long. Are you guys playing anything of merit?
I'm jumping onto League of Legends.
Oh.
The other game I'm playing is Kirby Adventures, and seeing that's an NES title.
I did have a question. I mentioned that I had a question before.
Yes, sir.
Was Kirby Adventures the first Kirby game?
No, was Kirby's Dream Land for the Game Boy.
For the Game Boy. Are you sure?
I Wikipedia'd it.
I knew it because I remembered playing the game. Like, the Game Boy one is all I played.
Yeah.
Because I had a Game Boy at that point. My parents would only let me have one video game console at a time when I was a kid. So if I wanted a Game Boy, I had to sell my Nintendo. So at that point, when Kirby's Dream Land came out.
What was it like to live with Nazis?
It was fine. My parents are good people. Jesus.
Only one console at a time.
And then I sold the Game Boy and got a Super Nintendo. And then they kind of dropped that rule when we got into middle school and we had a PlayStation and a Game Boy Color and a couple other things.
Nice.
But
yeah, I would say
I played a lot of Kirby's Dream Land. I never even like heard of Kirby's Adventure until I got into like high school, like well after that game had been out. So.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I always thought of Kirby's Dream Land as the original Kirby, you know?
Yep. And I think that's true. And if you think about it, like, the character of Kirby doesn't take a lot to animate. It is a blob.
It's a ball.
It's the regular running motion. It's the sucking in air. It's the puffed up. And that's it. And the blowing out of air.
Yeah.
And then hats. Various types of hats.
But the thing I find funny about this game is how I'm a quarter of the way through it, and I feel like I have no skills at playing it, but I'm a quarter of the way through it.
Well, there you go.
It's like one of those things where it's really easy to play. It's pretty fun. I got on the 3DS. It's like a 3D classic or whatever.
Okay.
I think we played it. We were hung over at my buddy's house one Saturday morning, and we just kind of traded off, and we got through like half the game in a few hours while the other guys were making breakfast in the in the kitchen. We had another two of us were trading off on Kirby's Adventure.
Nice. Well, yeah, League of Legends. I started playing when I got back from PAX. It's a really cool game. for free. Like the thing is, it's a free game. And I was looking at like an MMO or trying to get into something a little bit more online oriented, and have a friend who's getting into it and convinced me to go online with it. The one thing I will give League of Legends credit for is having a plethora of options to ease you into it, so you're not getting lambasted and harassed online for being.
You're not thrown into 5x5 master games or 5-on-5
yeah.
master level games.
So they have a couple of tutorials that are pretty good, like teaching you the basics. Then they basically have, it's a co-op versus AI, so it's five people versus five AI combatants. Really cool way to learn. The first match I did was awesome. We only had one person who was AFK. Everyone else was there, so it was 4 versus 5. We kicked the computer's ass, felt pretty good. Every match I've been in since then, at least 2 people have been AFK in these matches. And it's completely maddening, because it's like, okay, now it's 3 versus 5. And even though they're computers, 3 versus 5 is an unfair, unfair match. You can't have the lanes properly attended with your champions, and you just absolutely get your ass whooped. And my plea to everyone online is, like, if you're going to go into a game, don't go AFK. Just don't play. Just don't play.
Just disconnect.
And I'm guessing you must get some XP for being in the match.
Yeah, I think so. I think,
and they're probably just XP campers. That's my best guess right now. Is I'll level up slowly by just going in matches and not doing anything. Just play the god. Just sit in a lane and just auto attack. I don't care. Do something.
But I wrote this mouse macro to join games. I didn't write it to play it for me.
Yeah.
Bastards.
So that's my one gripe with the game right now. I'm pretty sure once I actually get into player versus player, that should go away, hopefully.
I would hope so.
Because that would completely break the game for me, because I'm not that good, so I will rely on the skill of my other players.
Yeah.
At least right now. And when they're not there, it really breaks the game. Because it's like you just get owned all the time because you don't have another person in the lane with you.
I think I played League of Legends. We talked about that a while ago.
Sure.
I tried it for a little bit.
Yeah. Everyone tries it. It's like pot. Everyone's done it at least once.
Oh, I was going to say like meth. You guys haven't tried meth?
No. I can honestly say I've never tried meth.
I'm not in a band. I'm sorry. Oh.
Kind of band?
After the show? No.
It's a speed metal band.
I don't think meth is really a wind down drug.
Nerdy bands, so they don't have parties after shows.
Yeah, no, the drug you have on is math. I think that's different.
I'm mainline math.
You mainline math.
I tried the League of Legends. It's...
I tried heroin. What?
I found it really impenetrable. I played the same thing you did, the co-op versus AI. And, I mean, I played, you know, that same style back on Warcraft 3 and in Starcraft 2. And so I was familiar, at least, with some of the terminology and some of the strategy, but I just never could... I was a little put off by the time commitment to be able to get skillful at it.
I'm surprised that...
I guess I'm just kind of put off by maybe that sort of thing in online games where you have to play so much of the same thing, just failing over and over to get good at it. I much rather prefer the single player experience where you're kind of brought up with the game and the difficulty increases as you...
I will say one of the things that turned me off at first is people saying, you know, it's a 45-minute time commitment per round. And now they see it, like, a round will take 45 minutes, pretty much to the dot.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And I find that actually to be an enjoyable amount of time.
In my experience, I immediately, you know, I start a 45-minute round, and 3 minutes in, I'm made aware of some chore I have to do.
Yeah.
And then I'm like, oh, I'll just do it after this round. And then it's a whole damn, you know, almost an hour, and it's like, shit. And it's just stressful after that, but... So is that it though, League of Legends and Kirby?
Mario Kart 7, still playing Mario Kart 7.
Cool.
What about you guys?
Jeffrey?
I talked about Final Fantasy 13 last time I was on the show. I've just been kind of clearing that out. So nice. I haven't started anything new yet.
Playing everything on the disc?
Playing everything. I did buy some DLC though.
Uh-oh.
Wow. So,
I bought the Zaz.
Did you buy the Prada bag? Is that with the DLC?
I did not buy any of the costumes. They had Mass Effect costumes for...
Yeah. Square Prom.
For God's sake.
Yeah.
I thought of you last week.
I'm sorry
about this because I was looking through.
I'm sorry for thinking about you.
No, but I was just looking through. The best buy the Target had. And they had Final Fantasy 13-2 on sale for $30.
Oh, I paid $60.
Full price. And that was the thing. Like, you came in here, you were so proud of yourself that you paid full price for a game.
Yeah. It's been a while, I think.
And like every week, I kind of look at the circulars to see what are the deals. And for a while, there was some pretty...
Oh, you know, it's not... I don't think it sold all that great, the 13-2, so...
I think, like...
But it's a fun game to 100%, I think it does.
Oh, yeah.
Like, you know how, like, most RPGs, or at least kind of that style of Final Fantasy ones, you know, maybe 40 to 60 to beat and 120 to master. Yeah. Where this one was 25 to beat and 50 to 60 to get 100%, yeah. So I'm actually kind of close. I only have a couple of, like, optional bosses. And
nice.
Then the achievement where you have to... Or the fragment, the quest where you have to get every bad guy in the game. You have to fight him at least once. You got to fill your bestiary.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
The one game I was surprised to see on sale was SSX. I think it was $30
Tricky.
Already.
Already? Didn't it just come out like a month ago?
It was on sale for 1 week for $30. But yeah, I mean, that game dropped pretty quick. But I think we're in that time period where no one's buying games.
Yeah, it's very much the doldrums.
Yeah, the April, the LA noirs of the...
The Mass Effect 3s of the world.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I just remember because LA Noir came out during the doldrums of May. Yeah. Last year.
That was all there was to play.
Yeah.
I remember that.
Okay, I got to get going in two minutes.
So. I know. I was just going to wrap up real quick. I'm playing Vandal Hearts, which was a PS1 turn-based strategy, which... PS1 graphics on a 42-inch HD screen. Pretty amusing looking.
They should put that on Vita, though. I wonder if that is on Vita.
There's a PSN prequel to it called Flames of Judgment. So I don't know if you can play those on Vita or not.
Vita.
But it's fun. It's fun. It's one of those games that I've started it like 7 times and I just got stuck and never did it. Like all those tactics games. But I'm enjoying it. So that's pretty much it. I'll probably download Legend of Grimrock tonight and probably talk about it next week.
But that did sound kind of fun. I might have to check
it
out.
It looks intriguing.
I don't really keep up with what's coming out, but I usually look at the Steam, list of what has come out.
Yeah.
Last week. So.
Yep. Yep. So I think we should wrap up here. Big thanks to Jeff for coming in.
I gotta go.
I know. But I'm thanking you.
Say something about the social media.
I gotta go.
Okay. Yeah. Oh, now I'm definitely gonna stretch it. All right.
We have Twitter and Facebook and Tumblr accounts.
We do. Twitter.com/YagsFPG, Facebook.com/YetAnotherGamingShow, and Tumblr at YetAnotherGamingShow.tumblr.com. Yay. Although it's a little behind, but, that happens.
Yes.
The Tumblr is stuck in last year still.
It is. So, who are you? You're Ian.
I am.
Thanks to you.
Thank you. Thank you for forgetting my name. And if you forget your clothes, check out shop.fancypantsgangsters.com to get some new threads for your body.
We can't ship that fast.
Well, be naked for a couple days, I guess.
Yeah. Okay.
If you have that dream where you're in school naked and you
it's already too late.
Then when you wake up, you can remember to buy something from the Fancy Pants Gangster Shop.
That's right. All right. Big thanks. Oh, next week we'll have one of the guys from Freelance Games, creators of Trailer Park King series. I'm looking forward to that. It should be fun. He'll be on next week. And so stay tuned for that. Anyway, thank you guys very much for listening. Thanks for all the reviews and stuff that you guys have been doing to promote the show. We really appreciate it. And keep telling your friends. And I guess we'll see you guys next week.
Show me the Bob.